inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show, coming to you, as always, on the Radio Air Network on Tuesday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or on Monday at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome back to all of you who have been here before, and welcome for the first time to any of you who are first tuning in. I like, at the beginning of every show, to talk a little bit about what it is I do, because has been clear to me, calling this The Lynn Show actually doesn't tell anybody anything about what I'm doing. So if you're tuning in for the first time, I'm going to do a little tap dance and tell you what it is. And if you've been listening, thank you very much for your patience in hearing it again. I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will. I'm a psychotherapist, and I used what I have learned in my 30 years of practice to write this book, and it is about why people can't always do what they want to do when they want to do it. I spend a certain amount of time in every show talking about the concepts in the book. I'm working my way through it. Each one of the concepts explains a little bit more about what might be getting between you if there's a change you want to make and making it. So in the earlier shows this year, I completed chapters 1, 2, and 3, which are about the family, and which you can get on my website, thelynnshow.com, that's L-Y-N-N-E, if you're curious. And I'm in the second half, I guess that's the second third of the book, chapters 4 through 6, and also part 2 of the workbook. And this section is on danger. It's my belief that if we want to make a change and we can't make it, one of the things that gets between us and making that change is the belief that that change, along with bringing us what I want, Freudian slip, along with bringing us what we want, will also put us in some potential danger. We may not be aware of the danger, but our unconscious is, and is protecting us by not letting us make this change. The danger, I talk about it, when I talk about the danger, I sometimes call it your catastrophic expectation. And in this show, I'm going to describe that and tell you how you might be able to find yours, if there is one. We all pretty much know what we want to happen when we make a change, but nobody can predict the outcome of a change they haven't yet taken. We can't forecast the result of a change, but we can imagine it. And when we think about the outcome of a difficult change, for most of us, we envision our worst-case scenario, otherwise known as our catastrophic expectation. Catastrophic expectations come from the belief that the worst that can happen will happen. And whether they're real or imagined, catastrophic expectations have the power to keep us from changing. Now, our unconscious is monitoring our level of danger minute to minute, and it will stop us from making a change it believes will endanger us, but it will help us to make the change if we are no longer in danger from that change. So, as I said before, the way to find out whether you can endure the danger, you know, find out if it's imagined or if it's real, if there's something you can do about it, is to discover your catastrophic expectation. And I'm going to give you a very simple exercise by which you can discover it. It's called the what would happen if exercise, or asking the what would happen if question. All you do is you ask yourself, what would happen if I actually made this change magically? I'd signed up for swimming lessons. I'd told my kids they no longer could sleep in until I made breakfast. They had to get up and make breakfast for themselves. I told my husband I wanted a separation. I went back to graduate school. Whatever it is. Suddenly, magically, I've already done this. Now, what are the positives and what are the negatives that I can expect from it? Now, of course, because you want this, you will probably first think of the positives. That's natural. But if you haven't been able to do this, then there are negatives. And if you think long and hard, the chances are good you will come up with some of them. I'm going to give you some examples. If for the positives, you might think that when you've changed, you'll be happier, richer, prouder, thinner, safer, better liked, or maybe that the change will bring you approval or employment or relief or satisfaction and security or love and marriage. But if you haven't made this change, some of the negatives that you might find are that you might have to perform or take risks, live up to your reputation, be responsible, be lonelier, busier, more visible, or say no. Or maybe that others would judge you or expect more of you or be angry at you or surprised by you, or that they may feel jealous, left out, or abandon you. You can see how any of these things would be a danger that you might not be willing to risk, even to get this thing you want. But before you do anything about any of that, you have to know what they are. So try asking yourself the what if question. And if you get some answers, please don't feel compelled to do anything. I'm going to get to the what you do about it later. Knowing it is such an important step forward. Congratulate yourself on knowing. Okay, enough of that for now, because the other thing I do in these shows is I've been interviewing artists. I'm calling the series Anatomy of an Artist, and I've been interviewing actors and musicians and sculptors, and it's so much fun. And in this show, I'm going to play an interview I did with Susan Seaforth Hayes and her husband, Bill Hayes. They are, as you probably know, stars of the soap opera Days of Our Lives. That is perhaps what they are best known for. But as you will hear in these interviews, they have done everything that can possibly be done in entertainment, from opera to TV. And they are so delightful. I'm sure that you are going to enjoy these interviews as much as I did. So, without further ado, as they say, Susan Seaforth Hayes.
I am here with Susan Seaforth Hayes, and very grateful to be here with her.
Well, I'm delighted to be any place, and particularly delighted to be with you on a rainy afternoon in
yes.
Sarasota, Florida, and to be invited to participate in your artist overlook. I've been a performing actress since I was 4 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
I began in Grand Opera, Trouble in Madame Butterfly, a mute role, but nevertheless, if the child is out of control, it can ruin the whole show. And my first appearance on stage was with the New York Metropolitan Opera with Dorothy Kirsten.
How did that happen?
That happened because my mother knew the publicist, and they were looking for a blonde child with a kimono. And our gardener had a child's kimono, and I had blonde hair, and my mother was an actress. So it all worked out just fine, and a lover of Puccini. So I have been in the performing arts for a long, long time, working in all media, working in radio, working in film, television, live television, which was somewhat scarier than television is now, and, of course, soap opera for many, many years. In several different soaps before I found a home on Days of Our Lives,
yeah.
which I began in 1968 and I'm still appearing on. My long career was spiked and improved enormously by my marriage. Mm-hmm. I had done well as a serious actress and was considered a good serious actress. Not a pretty actress, but serious. I was the fourth recast of this role on Days of Our Lives, and I was doing okay. And then Bill Hayes was cast to work on the show and then to work opposite me as a troublemaker, and my character was a troublemaker, and the two of us were going to make trouble for all the good people on the show. Well, Bill isn't a troublemaker. Bill is a wonderful human being, and I fell for him long before he fell for me. And in our secret life, I always say to him, remember, I loved you first, even after all these years of marriage. And my persona as a human being changed as an actress as well, and I became hopefully more like him, more attractive to the public, and we were perceived as a very hot couple, the first of the super couples. We appeared on the cover of Time magazine as a couple. Time had photographed everybody in the soap opera industry and then chose who they thought was the hottest. And we had a great photographer, and I had these ideas. The cover of Time magazine has a red border. I will wear a red garment, lots of chest showing. It's about soap opera. Let's drench my face in artificial tears. Okay. Let's have Bill pleading, trying to get something out of the woman, and the woman is just in a tragic situation. Well, that very melodramatic, operatic, silly picture was the one that they chose for the cover, and they titled the story on all soaps in America at that time, Sex and Suffering in the Afternoon.
Wow.
So that was something of a peak for my creativity as somebody who stages scenes. We continued on the show. We have continued to work in the theater. We've been blessed that we've been able to work together, not just on that particular show, but on many. And we've done love letters all over the country. We first worked together before we married in the theater for Bob Turoff of the Golden Apple Dinners there in
Sarasota.
In Sarasota, we did Oklahoma together. I was 8-0 Annie. I didn't have that top notes to be Laurie, but I could be funny. So we did that together. We've done Oliver together here. We've done Tribute together here. We've done Love Letters here. And I just finished working in Funny Girl. And Billy is now starring in Chicago here. And I feel like I'm in the show because I taught him the lines for so long. and I stand outside the shower and hear him rehearse all the numbers. So we think of Sarasota as our other home. We really love it here.
Yeah. You still live in L.A.?
Still live in L.A.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. But there's enough work there that's a good place to
and
be.
And that's why people stay.
That's why people kind of have to stay.
I'm curious, do you remember the 4-year-old?
I do.
You remember that experience?
I do remember the experience. Well, it was so different from any experience I had ever had.
No kidding.
And this is what it was. How dark everything was around me. The vastness of backstage. We were doing it at the Shrine Auditorium, which is a pretty huge place. And I remember being told by my mother to behave, to be very still. Well, Dorothy Kirsten had taken me into her dressing room and explained what we were going to do in the scene. There was no rehearsal. and she was holding me in her arms, and she makes her entrance singing in Italian, "Can you deny this, this, this? Can you deny the existence of this child, this love child?" And she hit that first note as I was in her arms, and my head came off her shoulder and said, "What the hell was that? Where is that coming from? That sound, that enormous, beautiful, right in my ear." And in what she should have had as a catch breath, as a moment to catch her breath for the next note, she said, "Put your head down, you're supposed to be asleep." So, back down. And it was great. They let me take a curtain call by myself, and it was wonderful. I had many wonderful experiences as a child actress. I got to work with Mary Martin and fly in Peter Pan. I got to work with Billy Burke, who was the widow of Florence Ziegfeld. So when I was playing a scene with Florence Ziegfeld in Funny Girl, I thought to myself, "I'm the only one in this company old enough to really know what's going on here." But I had toured with Miss Burke for a year and a half in a rather a bad play that we did all over the East Coast, the Straw Hat Circuit. We did it in Pasadena, we did it in Phoenix, we did it in Palm Springs, and we wound up doing it on NBC Matinee Theater live television.
Oy.
Very much annoying, because Miss Burke didn't quite understand about television, that if you walked off the set because something hadn't gone right, you had to go back, because the show was still going on.
Right.
But,
yeah,
those were experiences that Bob Turoff tells me I'm a professional, and I think it's the highest accolade he can give someone, and I really appreciate it when he tells me that.
Well, it's clearly true, and I'm curious, did you always want this? I mean, you've been doing it all your life.
I always want it?
Yeah.
My mother had been an actress, and she was an actress during the period that I was working as a child, and
so she was working, too?
She was working, too. Sometimes we worked together as mother and daughter, often not, and I admired the fact that she had to work so hard. I yearned for the affirmation of a contract, a running role. Never had it as a kid. Never had it. Worked at Warner Brothers, replacing their contract list, people that couldn't cut the mustard in their television series. I'd come in and do a show when somebody else had been fired for just not being
professional.
I don't know, serious enough or whatever it was. But I wasn't cute and blonde. And when I finally got the job on Days of Our Lives, it was my first contract in my life, and I was already close to 30. So, boy, it meant the world and all to me.
Well, it's security.
It's fake security, because you can be fired like that,
right,
in television. All contracts for actors are easily cancelable by the producer, and not by the actor. The actor gets sued. The producer can dump you with
whatever
no
they want
at all.
Right.
However, that has never happened to me, but the real desire to be an actress didn't come until I started in soap opera. It was something that I did, and I enjoyed the exciting people I was around. And I know my mother and my grandmother, who raised me, wanted it for me a lot. But I didn't care so much about it myself until I really became invested in the character of Julie on Days of Our Lives. And then I cared. I cared so much, I cared too much. I got between myself, and this is a job, and this is a character, this isn't you. You don't have to defend it, you don't have to fight with the writers, you don't have to fight with the producers, you don't have to make a scene over the costumes. It took a while for me to learn that, too long. And then when Bill and I were married as a couple on the show, then I took on defending him when he didn't want to be in a war.
Yeah.
So I made the mistake, which is classic, that actors make on soaps, of saying, "Nobody can play this but me. Nobody understands it but me.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever be as good as me. And I'm going to tell you how to do it." Big mistake.
Yeah, this probably doesn't go down all that well.
Doesn't go down with any department.
Yeah. Right.
Props doesn't
right.
like it.
Costumes don't like
and
it.
And the producer
writers don't like it.
Hates you. Yeah. And the writers get even. So,
yes. Ooh.
Better not.
Ooh.
Better not.
Learned the hard way.
Learned the hard way. I think I've finally learned. I'm not sure. Love doing plays. where there's no discussion. This is the play.
Right,
and
right.
You start at the beginning and you know how it's going to turn out. And you can't influence anybody. So I'm loving working in the theater here. And my husband is having the time of his life doing Billy Flynn. I purposely stayed away from rehearsals. I went to the last dress rehearsal and was very, very pleased. And then opening night, I couldn't believe it. He was funnier. He was cuter. He was more effective. He danced better. And all I could think of as I'm clapping and shaking my friend's hands and saying, it's not my imagination. He really is terrific, isn't he? And then secretly thinking to myself, I get to go home with that guy. I get to go home with the cutie that's up there in the tuxedo. So this has been a real dance of delight for us
yeah.
to be here.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you. I'm serious. You have brothers and sisters?
I have half-brothers that I wasn't raised with and a half-sister.
Now, is this your father's?
My father's family.
Right.
And I was kind of introduced to them when they were kids and I was 16. And then on my wedding day, we invited my father to the ceremony, a little family ceremony in our house. And he fell in love with Bill's parents, and Bill's parents liked him. And I kind of reconnected with my father. I'm the child of divorce. And then reconnected with his children, all of whom are talented in the arts, in painting, in decoration, in interior design, in architecture. Not actors. They're not actors, but they have all those other gifts. So it was strange and wonderful for me in my middle 30s.
To have a family.
To have this family.
Yeah.
And it's just gotten tighter and better as the years have gone by.
So oh, that's great.
Very happy about that.
Was your dad also creative?
My dad was creative, but he was not in the arts. He was in building. My mother and father had a World War II whirlwind marriage. I think he was afraid of the fact that she was an actress, and they didn't know each other well enough to really overcome what he imagined it meant to be an actress and what she imagined it meant to live in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
She couldn't imagine it very well, and it wasn't made clear to her what their life would be, and he thought she wanted something else, and she loved him till the day she died.
Oh, my.
A lot.
That must have been difficult for you.
Oh, it was very sad. Made me wish very much to have a good marriage. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I put my husband first, above everything else. I want him to be happy, and I want us to have a good time with every day that we, you know, there's so much in life you cannot control. But you can control somewhat of your attitude about it. And our first principle is to be polite to each other first. This is the person you're most intimate with in the world. Don't say awful things.
Don't
to that
be mean.
Person. Don't be mean. Don't hold grudges. Don't carry on.
I know that you know how rare that is.
He's a rare person.
Well, apparently you are too.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but he's
well,
a
you can't,
gem.
But you have to appreciate that in order to be with somebody who does that. You have to see that as a value yourself.
When I met Bill, I thought he was such a good man, such a spiritual man, in addition to being gifted
and cute
and attractive, that I wanted to be around him for the sake of truly trying to adapt myself into his way of doing things and to become a better person. But gosh, if you can have that in your that someone like that in your life, so he's a mentor as well as a spouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking that you didn't have very much in the way of male role modeling when
None.
You grew up, so...
Zipperini.
Right, right. So this would be even more significant to you. The man in your life would be playing a lot of roles. More than just husband. In,
yes.
You know, with some...
And he's been an extraordinarily good father, and I admired that.
So are you a stepmom?
I'm a stepmom to 5.
Wow.
And a grandmother to 12, and a great-grandmother to 9.
Wow.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah, they're a good bunch.
Well, so you have now, you went from being a loner, essentially, to being, you know, part of a tribe.
The day we married, Bill has 2 brothers, and they have children, and his parents were living when we married, and I married into an immediate family of 22.
Well, and then also...
All of them musical.
Oh, my gosh.
Wonderfully musical, yes. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting. I mean, not only did you get his family, but you got your family, in a way, around the same time.
I grew up very much alone, but those days are behind me.
was there ever any yearning for a little bit of solitude? I mean, because you get, I'm imagining that you got used to a certain amount of solitude in the childhood you had.
We have a lot of solitude now. We have a lot of quiet. We have serious music in our house, but a lot of time for quiet. And really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Those are the moments when you can think and change your direction, evaluate what's going on.
Yes.
And I think all human beings need to slow down their tempo. And,
I agree.
Think it through.
Yeah. Just reconsider, you know, evaluate, right?
Yes.
Right.
Think it through.
Yeah. You know how unusual it is to have a lifetime of being an actor.
Yes, it's a gift. But we mustn't confuse a movie career or having a television series with being an actor. You know, if actors wish, they can go on until the very, very end of their days. You just have to say, okay, I've transitioned out of that.
Right.
I'm not an ingenue anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Moppet anymore. I have become a character person. I have become an old character person. Or whatever phase you're going through. And to be at ease with it and not to be angry and longing for the days of glory when you did so-and-so and you wore such-and-such a bra size. And now you have to kiss it goodbye and move on. But an actor can perform if they choose to the very end of their days. That's a wonderful thing.
It's true. I suppose I was thinking more of being able to survive financially as an actor for all those years.
Slim pickings.
No kidding. But still you managed to do it.
We're ahead by being together.
I suspect it has more to do with your talent than you're letting on.
I don't know.
It's all right.
I don't know. I think of myself as a lucky person. I've gone on.
Have we spent too much time on you?
We spent 20 on this.
It's all right.
We got to get Billy.
Well, all right. Let me thank you for this.
Thank you.
And we're going to get Billy. And I'll stop this.
And now, as you heard at the end of my interview with Susan, I'm going to play my interview with Bill Hayes. And here it is.
So I'm sitting here with Bill Hayes. And as I was explaining to Susan, I'm doing this series called Anatomy of an Artist. And I'm interviewing people who make their living with their creativity, which is clearly something you have done.
Yes, ma'am. I started in 1947.
Wow.
Yeah, that's 61 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
How did you start?
I graduated from college in 1947. I had a wife who was just newly pregnant. I figured I better go to work someplace. I have to sell something or I have to need to get a job, a paying job.
And let me stop you.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
DePaul University, Greencastle, Indiana.
And what did you study?
Music and English were my majors.
Okay. And
music because I enjoyed it, and English because I figured it would help me wherever I ended up. I had no idea where I was going in the world.
You didn't have a, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm planning to do, any of that?
No. You see, my dad was a businessman. He sold World Book, Encyclopedia. And what he did in his spare time was he was in local musicals and sang and acted, and that was what he did for fun. And so that's what I knew. I had no idea that you could get paid for doing that. So when I graduated, I had no idea. My young brother had written to the stage manager of Carousel, just left New York, gone to Chicago. We were from Chicago. And he said, I'm a tenor. If you need a tenor replacement when you get here, I would like to audition. He got a card saying, okay, Phil, come to the Schubert Theater at 2 o'clock on Tuesday and be prepared to sing a song. We need a tenor. Phil had a strep throat. Couldn't make a sound. So I took a piece of music off the piano, a piece of my dad's music, and went down to the Schubert Theater, sang. Changed the name on the card from Phil to Bill, very surreptitiously, and they picked me. I think I fit the costumes of the guy I was replacing.
That's a great story.
Yeah. We get paid doing this. They would pay me $70 a week.
Oh, my God.
I thought, hey, this I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided.
And you were already married?
Yes, I was
must
already
have been
married.
Very young.
Got married when I was a senior in college.
Wow.
I had been in the Navy, and so I wasn't that young. And I stayed in Chicago working in that show, in Carousel, in the singing chorus. I went to Northwestern University mm-hmm. and studied the voice.
So did you say to yourself, well, listen, if I'm going to try and make this a career, I need to do something?
Yeah. And so I figured I'll go get me a master's degree in music, and in case I don't like the performing.
You can always
teach. I could go teach or do something else. I'd at least have a master's degree. Mm-hmm. And I also got several jobs. I sang in a temple for 2 years. I directed 2 church choirs. I got a job singing for the new thing called television in the background. I was in a jazz quintet singing duos on a television series. And I also got a job singing on a radio show.
What was the television show, do you remember?
It was called, yes, it was The Adventures of Homer Herc. I'm sure you've heard of it. And no, it was a half-hour musical every week. There was a fellow named Homer Herc, and he had all these experiences, and they sang.
Wow.
And it was very well done. There were 5 of us who sang piano and us. And I sang 2 songs every Tuesday and 2 songs every Thursday on WJJD in Chicago for a couple of years while I was getting my master's.
So you were essentially making a living as a performer.
I was, right off the bat, yeah.
How unusual is that?
Yes, and I've never had to get a real job. I'm so thrilled about that. I have been able to earn a living mm-hmm. at it, and not many people do.
They always say, don't give up your day gig.
Yeah, and somehow I haven't had to do that. I've worked very hard. It's a demanding business. You have to work hard. Like, right now, we are doing Chicago
mm-hmm.
at the Golden Apple Dinner Theater.
In Sarasota, Florida.
In Sarasota, Florida. It's a demanding show.
Yes,
everybody in it works hard.
Yeah.
The character I play, Billy Flynn, he talks a blue streak.
And he dances, and
he
sings,
and
he does, yes,
right.
I know.
And the 2 girls who are playing the leads, who are playing Velma and Roxy,
they're working every minute.
They work every minute. All the people in, we have a chorus, but they all play many parts, and they all sing, and they all dance.
They're working.
It's a hard show, but what fun.
I know.
What a kick. And that's been my whole life.
Gosh, something I wanted to ask you that went right out of my head, because I was so busy listening to you talk with so much pleasure.
Well,
oh, I know what I wanted to say, because it's a non sequitur. That's why I forgot it.
Okay.
It's almost as though you had a guardian angel.
Could be.
You sort of slid into that first job, and then you never slid out.
That's right. That's right. I would agree with you. I have had a guardian angel going along with me. When I was working for Carousel that first summer, they were paying me $70 a week. I got $15 a week for singing at the temple. I got $15 a week for doing the church choirs. I got $20 a week for singing the duos. And I got $9 a show doing the radio shows at WJJD. So that's what we lived on.
That was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money then.
47. Yeah. That was a lot of money then.
Right. For a kid you weren't a kid, but for somebody just coming out of college
right.
with no real skills.
Right.
The world would have looked at you and said...
No professional experience.
Right.
I had been singing. I grew up in a musical family, and we all sang all the time. But you hadn't studied. I hadn't really studied voice. I played fiddle. Good fiddle in high school, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew music. I knew how to read music. I'd done a lot of singing.
Oh, you knew how to read. Oh, of course, you played the fiddle, so you could read.
Sight read very well. That's why I got my jobs.
That's right. So... Are any of the other of your siblings performers?
No, they have never been. My young brother Phil, along to me, was done several jobs, but not as a performer. My other brother George has not been a performer, and I think I lived my dad's life for him.
Yes.
I think he always wanted to be a performer, and I did it for him.
Yes, and that's not uncommon. That it's not uncommon for a child in the family to live out an unrealized dream for a parent. Sometimes it's not such a good thing, but in this case it turned out to be the perfect thing.
Yes, and one time, in 1955, I got hired to play Lieutenant Cable in South Pacific. The producer, director, asked me, "Do you think your dad would want to play Captain Brackett?" I said, "I could bet my house on that." And he asked him. My dad took off a week from work during our rehearsal week, and then for the 2 weeks that we played, he would work in the daytime, come home, take a nap, and go off and play Captain Brackett. He was wonderful, and we got to play
with each other. Oh, I had tears in my eyes.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
It was wonderful, and there's some wonderful lines where I say, for instance, "Wait till that old bastard Brackett hears about this," you know, and he has similar lines where we're really going at each other. It was wonderful. Oh, it was very moving and wonderful.
Was your mother alive?
Yes. She was there.
Oh, my God. What a gift to give a parent.
Yeah.
And I hear from what you're saying that, you know, tremendous affection that you have for your family.
Oh, family is more important than anything. I have a lot of family.
Yes, Susan was telling me that when she married you, she went instantly from being essentially a loner to the...
huge family. Mm-hmm. I have five kids. When she married, she had five children. Instant family.
How old were your children at that time?
From teenage up to young 20s. My oldest was already married. In fact, my son Bill married...
my son Bill?
Yes, a few months. You know Carousel very well.
Of course.
He married before we did, so.
Wow.
Two of my five were married, and so now we have 12 grandchildren. We have 8 great-grands.
Oh, did you have him when you did that? I mean, did you sing that?
I played Billy Bigelow in Carousel, 5 different productions. Okay, you know the characters in it? One of them is Carrie Pipperidge?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my oldest daughter's name is Carrie.
Wow.
My oldest son's name is Bill. So when I was singing about...
yes.
She mightn't be so bad at that. A kid with ribbons in her hair. A kind of neat and petite little tin type of her mother. What a pair. Yeah.
Oh.
And my boy Bill, he'll be tall and as tough as a tree. Very, very moving to me.
Well, you didn't have to act that part.
Nope.
Gosh.
You know shows, don't you?
Yeah, I got my own background in
in theater, musicals.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to the two of you after we talk.
Yes.
But I'll explain to you what I explained to Susan is that I've been doing this series of interviews with artists, and when I interviewed Carolyn and Howard, it occurred to me that not only was it interesting to talk to artists about their career, but if I had a couple who were both artists, that in itself is a kind of special thing. So I'm going to want to do that. This is somewhat sensitive, so don't feel you have to answer me.
Okay.
But your first marriage, I mean, you had 5 children,
yes.
And then that didn't survive somehow.
Yes.
Was that related to the work?
Probably. Probably what split my first wife and me was probably my work. She and I had gone to high school together, got married when we were in college.
She didn't know she was marrying a...
no.
Right.
No. When we got married, I was not going to be a...
right. Whatever that is. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A gypsy. And also, I would say alcohol exacerbated whatever situation we had.
That'll do it.
Yeah. It'll get you.
Yeah.
It's so friendly.
Are we talking about you? Are we talking about her?
I would say she drank quite a bit for a while there.
Yeah, it can dull the pain.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
When you...
and you have 5 children.
My first several years, like 8 or 10 years, we were living in New York. I was home. I was doing your show of shows, which was all there. I did a lot of television. I worked on Broadway and Me and Juliet. I recorded almost entirely there. Then I began to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Business changes.
Yeah.
And you have to go...
where the work is.
Where the work is. And I traveled more and more. In 1961, I took Bye Bye Birdie on its national tour. I was away for a year. That's a killer.
That's a killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a killer. And also, two creative people in a marriage can be a challenge, but one person who's working in the arts and the other who isn't at all is really, really difficult.
Yep. I believe she was very jealous of my working in love scenes singing duets with girls.
Right. And she would have no personal experience of what that was like. And I would imagine there were a lot of women who were interested in you.
There's no end.
Right.
When you're on a hot television show or you're a semi-success or a semi-celebrity, there's no end.
No. And on top of that, if you're adorable and you're talented, I mean, I imagine it's really... And whether you take advantage of it or not, the person at home doesn't know
what
you're doing.
They don't know.
They don't know, right. Well, okay, so what would you like to say about the work, about being an artist, about that life, about... Just take a minute and think about it.
Well, it's been a thrill for me. I've worked in a lot of different facets of show business. I worked on Broadway. I did not only Me and Juliet for a year on Broadway. I did a revival of Brigadoon on Broadway. I worked with Olson and Johnson on 8th Avenue, which is close. I've made money recording. My one huge record is The Ballad of Davy Crockett, which all happened in one day. What an exciting day that was.
How did that happen?
Archie Blyer saw the first Disney presentation of the movie of Davy Crockett in December 1954. He called up the next morning, he called up the publisher, which was Disney, and said, who has recorded that song? And they said, what song? He said, that one that Fess Parker sings in the background? Oh, nobody wants that. That's background only. Archie said, okay, may I have a lead sheet of that, please? Mm-hmm. Yes. He called me, 8:30 in the morning, said, I got a song. Are you free to record? I am. Come by my office. I went by his office 12:30 that day. We went through it. He said, you like that? I said, I love that song. He said, they don't want it. They think it's nothing. You want to record it? Yes. Tonight? Yes. And it was one take. He went off after our meeting in the middle of the day, wrote the arrangement, called the guys that were going to play the date. I went off and studied the song for 6-8 hours. We got together at 10 o'clock that night. It took us about an hour and a half to get the microphones all in the right place. We had a little circle. We had a bass fiddle player, two guitarists seated like that, almost as close as you are to me, sitting there with a microphone in front of each of them. We had three boy singers and a jew's harp player. One of those. His jew's harp was just a little bit sharp, and Archie kept saying, or maybe it was flat. Anyway, he kept saying, could you file that and just change the pitch of it slightly to come up to this tone? And
so now, wait a minute. Where are you?
I'm right here. It's a little
circle. They're not baffling.
No, no baffle, no anything. We're just in a circle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Everything bleeding into everything.
The microphones.
No.
One track. One track for all these microphones.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. One take. And he said, let's listen to that. This is about 90 minutes into our...
Now, wait a minute. Is this Davy
That's it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And we listened to it. He said, play it again and crank it up. The guy turned it way up and played it. He said, that's perfect.
It's perfectly balanced?
Yeah. Everything. Let's do the other side. We did the other side,
which
was a song called Farewell. Lyrics by Davy Crockett himself. Music by one of Disney's composers.
Wow.
George Bruns. It was a beautiful little waltz. And it's his own company called Cadence. Mr. Sandman. Anywhere I Wander. Ecumpari. Hernando's Hideaway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was right at that time.
I had some of those records.
Yeah. Archie, it was all his money. The next morning, he ordered 750,000 copies of the record.
Oh, my God.
He ordered that many pressed.
He was brilliant.
He was brilliant. He knew. He knew. Just knew. He was a very conservative man, and he was so excited that night, he grabbed me, you know, very conservative. I mean, he always wore a hat. He carried a briefcase. He always wore a vest and a coat, you know.
Not exactly a music guy.
No. Very kind of...
Straight
guy. He grabbed me by the arms and said, "Boy, that's a hit," you know. He just knew.
Okay, now, did you have a contract? Did you have a deal?
Yeah, we got a deal. It wasn't very much, but I got paid for a kitchen.
so you were making royalties on it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, did you have a deal with him before?
No. I had recorded for 3 years for MGM Records, and we just decided, no, we're not working out right. We had done little success, but not great. So
you were free?
I was free. I was just free.
I'm telling you, you had a guardian angel. You did. This is, you know what bashert means?
Bashert?
Bashert, and I guess you don't. It's a Yiddish word.
Yeah, what is it?
It means meant to be, kismet. Yeah, some things are bashert. Usually it means a couple is bashert, you know, you are my bashert. Now you were meant for me.
Meant for me.
But
that's a new one for me.
Well, see, good.
A lot of Yiddishes.
I figured that you might, because, right, yes, well, you, in the New York theater,
yes,
I mean, come
right.
on.
And but, New York television, I mean,
oh, that's right.
Your show of shows.
Oh, yes.
Sid, Carl, mm-hmm. Howie, Mel Brooks.
That's
Mel
right.
I mean, you know, Yiddish is a part of life
at that point. Something like your brother Phil setting this whole thing up and then getting sick.
Yeah.
That's a bashert.
Okay.
You know, it's like you were meant to be there.
It's like
because
a noun.
Yes. It's not a verb.
It's not an adjective.
No, it's a noun.
A noun, okay.
No one's ever asked me that, but I'm... Yes.
That's a bashert.
That's a bashert, right.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like your career, you know, was.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I love hearing stories like this. Because so many of the stories that you hear from people who are trying to make a living in one of some of the arts are so much about struggle.
Well, there have been times when I had to call around and network, you know, and to find no television, no films, no theater, okay, I got to go play clubs, okay. So I'll go play the mountains dates for $100 a night.
Right. Well, that was another thing, is that you were willing to do whatever.
Yeah. I worked very hard for what I got.
And still are.
Yeah.
And still are.
Like, I found out very early that if I copy my own arrangements, I save money.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you can copy.
Oh,
well, of course you could read. You could copy.
Yeah. So I learned how to copy my own charts.
Gee, I have a couple of tunes. You want to copy for me?
Yeah, sure.
It's very expensive. It's
true. Right. Copying, it costs money.
I know.
I found that out. I tried doing arranging, but I was just too slow and not as creative.
Yeah, they needed it in an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's right.
I know.
I wasn't that quick.
Well, my God, so far, that's pretty much the only thing that the industry requires that you were even slow at. You know, whatever it was that the industry required, you found a way to do it.
Yeah. As it says in my bio, over 100 musicals and over 30 straight plays.
It's a career.
That's a career. I've done a lot of television. When my wife left, I needed a job where I would stay in one place. I called my agents and I said, no more theater, no more clubs, no more travel. To put me in one place so I'm home every night making dinner.
Yeah.
And doing laundry.
You got the kids?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that's when I went into Days of Our Lives. I said, would you like to audition for a soap? I said, oi.
Oi.
Oi. I had never watched one, so I had no idea if they were any good. But soap opera is a derogatory adjective.
For serious theater people.
Soap opera writing is poor. Soap opera acting is poor, etc. So I thought, well, maybe I could last for a while, but yeah. I got on and I found out how good the actors are and how good the writing
was. Hard they work.
And how hard they work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get a script and you memorize it quickly and you're on and go on and into the next one.
Right.
Work, but that's led me to...
Raise Your Kids.
Susan.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah. And it allowed you to be home.
Yeah, I was home every night.
And again, here's one of those, you know,
yeah,
one of those, whatever you want to call it, serendipity, synchronicity, you know.
Bashert,
yes, exactly. Oh, I'm glad to have given you something.
Yeah, a new word I got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where are you from?
New York.
Whereabouts?
Queens.
Queens. Uh-huh. I lived in Jackson Heights for a while.
When?
When I was living in New York, started in Manhattan. Family got a little bigger, moved out to Jackson Heights. Family got a little bit bigger, moved out to Franklin Square.
Oh.
And we got one more, moved out to Garden City.
Well, I went to Hofstra.
Well, you were in Garden City.
I know. I know.
Every day for 4 years.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We probably passed each other.
Yeah.
Where did you, you grew up in the Midwest, right?
Yeah.
And that that also, I mean, you're kind of a Midwest boy, and really, you had a kind of a New York career.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was there for 20 years.
Yeah.
You talked about my feelings about the arts. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled, really, to have been involved in the arts.
Yeah.
Susie and I wrote this book.
What is it?
A memoir called Like Sands Through the Hourglass.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah. All through our lives, people say, oh, you ought to write that book. We said, sure, yeah. Then a guy, a friend of ours, took us out to dinner and spent about 3 hours convincing us that we needed to write a book. His reasoning was that we have a relationship that people should know about. We are a philosophy of relationship or something. And so we wrote it, and it's been a success.
I'm sure. And you know, I'm going to stop us now because I think that is something that maybe we could talk about
together
with Susie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So just think for a second and see if there's anything else that you would like to be on the record as having said.
Well, I almost said before that what's most important is family. I mm-hmm. believe that. That's my treasure.
Yes.
My wife, my children, grandchildren, all
great
my family,
grandchildren.
Great-grandchildren. That's my treasure. The little bit of celebrity that I have enjoyed has been wonderful, but that's... means nothing compared.
Thank you, Bill.
I was fortunate enough to interview not only Susan and Bill individually, but Susan and Bill collectively. And if you've been listening, you know that I've become interested in and desirous of interviewing couples who make their livings variously in their arts and then to interview them together. I'm going to have to play those interviews in a later show because there's not enough time to do his and hers and theirs. But what I am going to do now, which tickles me no end, is I found on YouTube a copy of Bill Hayes singing The Ballad of Davy Crockett, and I'm going to play that. Actually, I'm going to play that right now.
Davy Crockett, the king of the wild frontier, born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, the greenest state in the land of the free, raised in the woods so he knew every tree, and killed him a bar when he was only 3. Davy Crockett, the king of the wild frontier, single-handed through the Indian War, till the creeks was whipped and peace was in store. And while he was handling this risky chore, he made himself a legend forevermore. Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. When he lost his love, his grief was gone. In his heart he wanted to leave it all and lose himself in the forest tall, but he answered instead his country's call.
Davy, Davy Crockett,
the choice of the whole frontier.
He went off to Congress and served a spell, fixing up the government and laws as well. Took over Washington, so we hear tell, and patched up the crack in the Liberty Bell. Davy, Davy Crockett, serving his country well.
when he come home, his politicking done. Why, the big western march had just begun. He packed up his gear and his trusty gun and lit out the grinning to follow the sun. Davy, Davy Crockett, leading a pioneer. His land is biggest and his land is best. From grassy plains to the mountain crest, he's ahead of us all, a meeting the test, and following his legend right into the west. Davy, Davy Crockett, the king of the wild frontier.
Isn't that great? If you listened to all of the interview with Bill, you heard him talking about the recording of this, and you listened to the jew's harp, and I don't know if you had, but I had this picture of these guys all sitting around together, and that they did it in one take, which, if you know anything about recording, is just extraordinary. And anyway, it's just lovely that we live in a time when I can find that, because he talked about it and there it was. So I hope that you enjoyed it. Boy, I sure did. I haven't had an opportunity to thank Josh Hackney, my wonderful, wonderful IT guy, who actually is responsible for downloading that from the from YouTube. I called him and I said, I need this and it's on YouTube. Can you download it and put it in my computer so I can use it? And he said, of course, we can do that. So if you've got problems, any kind of issues, concerns, questions about recording, engineering, electronics, Josh is the man. And you can email me at my website, thelinshow.com, and I will get Josh the message, and he will get back to you. Okay, I'm sure I'm running out of time, so I'm going to say thank you so much to Susan and to Bill and to you, and that I'll be back next week, same time, same place, same station, and I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. On ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten